Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla, with another quarantine edition of Wake Up Hollywood. We're welcoming back Abby Posner. Say hello to Abby once again. How are you, Abby?
Good to see you, my friend. I'm doing great.
We were just talking about when the last time you were on the show, it was either a year or 2 years, somewhere in between that time range.
What is time anyway these days? I don't even know what day it is right now.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, how are you dealing with everything that's going on in the world?
Oh, God, what a question. It's been very... here's what I'll say. It's someone told me at the beginning of this year that this is going to be the year of clear vision. It is 2020 after all, right?
Right.
2020 vision. And I believe that though this has been a very painful, eye-opening, heartbreaking year, I believe that, you know, like we're not, like America likes to be distracted by sports.
Yes.
America likes to check out, and there's not an option for that. So right now I feel like people are seeing things very clearly, and hopefully that will then inch to little baby steps to progress.
I love your attitude towards it because, you know, it's been a turbulent year, but, you know, it's eye-opening is like the best way to describe it with 2020. You know, it's like 2020 vision, eye-opening. That's a perfect little, you know, pun there. It's, you know what? I started a new album with the band January 13th, and I was just telling them, you know what? I've never done a record through pandemics, through earthquakes, through riots, through, I mean, it's just like murder hornets, whatever it is. It's like, what else we got? Let's not destroy the world before this record gets finished. So, you know, the one thing that I think this whole situation has taught us is that how much people love art. Because when they're quarantined, they're listening to music, they're watching films, they're watching documentaries, they're on YouTube watching videos. You know, so like the one thing that it's taught me, it's like, you know what? Maybe now people will value art in a different way than maybe we all did before, including myself, you know?
I think so. I think people are learning how to use like Zoom. You know, no one knew what Zoom was. That's a thing. We're learning how to maybe expand our art online in a different way.
Yeah.
Make connections to people that we haven't talked to in a long time, and sharing our music through these live, you know, kind of, I don't know. There's something about it that is actually, you're right. People are like hungry for art now, and they're signing up for these shows, and they're watching Facebook Live and supporting. And it's different.
It's different, but you know what? It's like, I feel like it's connecting everybody a little closer in a lot of ways. And it's also doing it socially distance appropriate. You know what I mean? It's really kind of odd because more people, like you said, are tuning into showcases, you know, virtual concerts. You and I are just going to do one, and you're putting together a songwriters round in a couple of weeks. Let's promote that real quick because I'm excited about this.
Yeah. So that's going to be on June 26th. I've started a monthly songwriters in the round. And, you know, normally we pass the song between four artists. I think that works really well because then you get a lot of different genres and you get a lot of different styles. And it just feels more, like you said, that connection, it feels more like communication rather than one person playing a bunch and then another person playing a bunch. So
I love that. I love songwriter rounds. I think they're like one of the best ways to share music, you know?
It's going to be really fun. So that's at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, June 26th. And I'll be posting on my social media and you'll be posting on yours and you can just find out more about it there.
And you know what? You inspired me to get a banjo. I bought a banjo. It's right over here.
No way.
Yeah. So I've been playing banjo and I love it. It's like such a cool instrument. I've been watching your videos. I'm like, banjo is such a cool instrument. It's just like a happy, you can't be sad or pissed playing the banjo because it's just like a happy instrument. It's just like, hey, let me take you out of whatever you're doing and put you in a completely different atmosphere right away. Like guitar, you can brood. Piano, you can brood. Banjo, you cannot brood. It's almost impossible.
You can brood if it's out of tune. It can be a gnarly instrument, especially those fretless banjos. They can be like the one behind me is a cello banjo, so it's an octave bass banjo.
Oh, my God.
You can brood. You can brood.
How many strings is your banjo? Is it a 5-string?
Yeah, this is the 5. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is like the drone is the one thing that I'm working on the most. It's like I don't quite have that drone with the picking.
Are you doing claw hammer or Scruggs?
I'm just I'm like transcribing like Bella Fleck and people like that, but like they have that drone. Like there's a song called New South Africa that I've always wanted to learn, and I learned it on guitar, and I was like, you know what? This just doesn't work because the intervals on guitar versus banjo, like how he's playing certain phrases. So I learned it and I was like, this is like, it's kind of ridiculous how I'm playing this on a guitar. It just doesn't make sense. So when I started learning on banjo, I'm like, oh, I see. Everything is so much more comfortable. So, but the one thing he has is that cool little, like that light drone that just it becomes like cyclical and hypnotic in the playing. So I'm envious because you already have that. You already have that down.
I mean, it's just there's different styles of playing. Actually, a friend that's going to join us for the songwriters in the round night, her name's Rosie Nolan. She plays clawhammer style, which is very different. It's almost like this thing where I don't do it at all. I do the Scruggs style, Earl Scruggs, which is the claw. Like you basically just do these three fingers.
Right.
Rolling patterns with them, you know. Like real basic kind of stuff.
And you don't use picks on your, you don't use those little finger picks, do you?
I like to touch the strings.
Yeah, that's how I am too. I'm the same way. I've tried to use those.
They hurt.
Well, they're weird. It's a weird sensation. Like I can use a guitar pick, no problem. But those picks, it's a very weird sensation. Like it's almost artificial.
No, I don't like them. I don't like them either. Not at all. Get them out of here.
Yeah, get them out of here. So, you know, you're going to play us something, but first tell all our listeners again, how many instruments you play? Cause this is impressive.
Oh gosh.
List them.
Let's see. So I play piano, bass, guitar, banjo, mandolin, drums, didgeridoo, some percussion like congas and, you know, some of the, I took Latin percussion while I was at Cal Arts. And that was one of my favorite classes. And then I dabble with like this Turkish instrument called the cimbuz.
Wow.
But like, yeah. And, oh, and the, whatchamacallit, the cajon.
That's a great instrument. I love that instrument.
I love that instrument too. It's awesome.
Every time I start a new instrument, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I love it. Oh my God. Oh my God. And then I'm like, oh my God, I just added more homework to my already complicated just lifestyle playing multiple instruments. And I only play really guitar and piano, but now I play mandolin, now I play banjo, and it's like, I'm like, why am I taking this on? Like, this is going to add way more homework than I... It's like, you know, I'm sure you feel like this. Like, I pick up guitar, and I like put in time practicing, and I'm like, okay, cool. And then I pick up piano, I don't pick it up, but I sit at a piano and put in time, and it's like, okay, cool. But now it's like, you know, I have the weight of thinking about why haven't I picked up a mandolin or a banjo where that was not in my world for the last 2 years. So yeah. It's almost like...
You have to be consistent just sticking with it. But it is. It for me, it always felt just so So fun. Like it wasn't like homework. It was like, if I wanted to learn a new instrument, it was just, yeah, I just love it so much. Like I could be buried in here for hours and hours and just, it's like my playground, you know?
Do you find more of it like a zone that you get into with certain instruments over others?
Yeah, I think there are periods of time. I go through like phases, I think, where I'm writing a lot more. I definitely, guitar is always like my main squeeze. You know, that's like my...
It's the best. It's the best. Yeah, it is.
Mistresses, but the guitar is definitely like the ball and chain.
Yeah. You know what? I started with piano, but I felt so hard for guitar that like, yeah, it's always going to be the first love. It's always going to be the first love.
That's but what I mostly write a lot of the songs on guitar.
Do you write on banjo as well, on mandolin, or do you kind of write on another instrument and then kind of rework it on banjo?
Well, I mean, like the first song I'll play, I wrote on banjo. And there's a few songs that I write for banjo and mandolin, but a lot of times it's mostly I'll start with guitar and then I'll do the production and build around that. Yeah.
So, well, let's have you play something for us. What are you going to play for us first?
All right. So I'll just start you off with a tune I wrote in Joshua Tree.
Nice.
Yeah, that's always a good place to create, right?
The best. There's something about the desert that just clears your mind, gets all the LA particles off of you. And it gets you in a different headspace. I have to go to the desert at least once a year just to have that experience because I love it for that reason. It's inspiring.
It's very cleansing. It's very cleansing. And I did a little like mini retreat there with a friend of mine and just wrote like nonstop.
That's awesome.
Right, and it's a good place to do that. Yeah, so I wrote this one there, and it's called Joshua Tree. So here we go.
Tombstone crooked as a wing. Whispers howl from the walls of this old home. Listen to them sing. Where do you go when you lose yourself and the road is all you see? What do you do with the love you felt? The mistakes are always free.
The changes, love the verse, love the chorus.
Thanks.
Slamming. Tell me what about Joshua Tree inspired that song?
Well, I was there, so it was like that's all I was seeing, you know, was just like wide open desert. And a lot of the metaphors are used about, you know, kind of inner turmoil and emotions and kind of explaining some of the movements of the desert, you know, like cactus standing like a ghost on a tombstone.
Love that.
Cricket as a wing. It was like I was staring off and kind of picking out this canvas of images to use.
I love when writers do that. When they paint a picture and a scene.
Yeah.
Because it's like it immediately takes you there.
Yeah, I love that. I feel I have a harder time, and I don't know if you can relate. I have a harder time writing very literal songs. I like to think from a more outside the box poetic. I mean, not to like, you know, think that I'm like this amazing poet, but I have a harder time going for the literal story. And I think that there's an art to that.
I think there's a season for writing. Like I find myself writing from different narratives, maybe 3 months at a time. Like sometimes it'll be very personal. Sometimes it'll be observational. Sometimes it'll be like, I'm going to completely take all of me outside of myself and just put myself in another situation or atmosphere or whatever it is. It all depends. But I love when writers experiment with those different narratives because I feel like when writers are just like a one trick pony, that bores me. But when a writer can show like a political side or like a paint a scene or like give you a story in a way that you're like, whoa, I didn't think about it like that. That's a touchdown, you know?
And that's like a real, I feel like that's a good challenge and a good, I don't know. It's like, it's something that we all need to do as artists is to kind of constantly push ourselves in a different
way.
If it's, like you said, if it's constantly coming from the inner experience and not being a voice of something that's happening, that's very important. Cause I feel like that's an important thing to do with someone that has a platform, you know, to speak from like at least your perspective about what's happening. And I've had a hard time. I think that comes with age. I think that a lot of people that start writing songs use it as like a self-soothing device, almost like
absolutely.
A thing, and it's about them, and that's fine. But after a while, you start to go, oh, I don't want to, I'm tired of writing songs about myself.
Yep.
You know?
But, you know, the funny thing is, for this next record I'm doing, it's been a combination of songs that I wrote 20 years ago, songs that I wrote very recently that are very, like, personal, things about the world, that, you know, that are going on and happening. And it's like a combination of all the things I like about songs that are written. And I find that what you said is the truth. It's like we as songwriters are always trying to like capture a moment, and whether it's like a healing moment or it's like a teaching moment or it's just a story moment, you know, and it's like when you can find those places, like that's what I like when albums do that, when it's like you can see different dimensions from song to song of a songwriter. And you've got that. You're a terrific songwriter. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing I love about you is you hustle. And so many young artists, they're so lazy. They're lazy, lazy, lazy. You are so ready to hustle and just like put it in first gear, second gear, third gear, whatever gear it takes to get you over the mountain. And it's like, I respect it so much because I'm like, that's how I was, you know? It's like, and I think that's what it takes. If you really love it, you are always thinking about it. You're always working on it. You're always practicing. You're always writing. You're thinking about your records. You're thinking about the next record, even while you're doing this record. It's like, that's, and I know you're like that. And I love that attention to detail. Tell me about, you know, when you're listening to music, when you're drawing from inspiration, what do you look for in the artist that inspire you?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I think one of my all-time favorite artists, like hands down, is Andrew Bird.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's just kind of like otherworldly.
Awesome.
Like,
yes.
He's like in a completely different category than pretty much any musician. And so I always listen and look to him for, I mean, I'm always listening to him. He's just an incredible artist and he's so talented and he really puts a lot, you can tell he puts a lot of thought, not only into his lyrics, but into his production.
Yes.
And so I feel like he's one of my main inspirations, and I always listen for, like, you know, how is he mixing this? Like, what is the snare? I mean, I'm a real dork. I mix and produce as well. So
yeah,
and I work in Pro Tools, and so I'm always listening, like, how did he do that, like, crazy giant vintage snare sound? And is he in a cathedral? Like, like, what's going on? I'm like always trying to tune into his production style as well as his writing is just unreal.
You know, I saw him, we played Bonnaroo in 2000, I want to say it was 2009, and I never heard of him before. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting at a stage, and he came on. And, you know, usually with, like, festivals, you see, like, a snippet of somebody, maybe three or four songs, and you just keep going by. And I remember sitting for his whole set. I was just like, this guy is the real deal. This guy is, like, the true artist of artists. Like, sees it, believes it, writes about it, makes you feel it. And those are, like, the four, like, parts of, you know, how he creates, you know. And I was so impressed because it was, like, beautiful music, but it became so visual. And it became so, like, it was like what you said, like, you know, a lot of bands at festivals will just turn to 11 and try to impress you with just being loud. And he came with dimensions and, like, flows of tempo and instruments that where the whole band broke down and you just see something come out of nowhere. And it's like, this is what it's all about. So I love when people take that attention to detail. You picked an amazing artist.
Oh, he's incredible. It's like, yeah, every piece, every song is like an incredibly complex painting that you just want to look at.
Well, let me ask you this. You said you're like, I'm really nerdy with music. You're like me. I'm the same way.
Yeah,
when you get obsessed with like production, what are some of the things that you find either, I'm going to ask you a two-part question, either the most frustrating when you're either finding ways to do production or some of the best things that you have found that are accomplishments or how you've gotten through obstacles with production?
Well, okay, so that's a good question. So you were mentioning making a record during COVID, right? So I was just working on a film score
awesome.
During COVID. And it was so intense because I had to send out like MIDI files and WAV files and clean up everything for string players. So I was composing a lot for cello and violin, and they had several parts to do as if they were, you know, orchestrating everything. And I had to orchestrate everything. And I use Reason.
Okay. I used Finale this last time.
Oh, it has MIDI?
Yeah. You know, I did the MIDI in Logic. And then I just transcribed it in Finale.
Yeah, Reason doesn't really have a transcription. You can send the MIDI and they can like see the MIDI and can transcribe it. I think they might, Pro Tools might have it, but I haven't really, you know, done the score transcription.
I just wish, like, Logic doesn't notate it correctly. So
it does.
I found like I played it and it notated things like it was played. But instead of like calling an E, like depending on the key, it would notate an F flat, and it's like, what?
That's,
you know,
like,
what I mean?
That's like Bartok.
So it's like silly things that are like not intuitive.
Yeah,
I found myself like kind of pulling my hair out. So I was just like, okay, I'm gonna get a string arranger to look at this and just go, oh, this is all it needs, because I want a program where I can just play it. And it's like I see it and it's notated correctly, just the way. Because otherwise I'll sit there all day and notate it. I don't want to do that. Like, that's going to drive me.
It's a big job. And I didn't do I just arranged it and created it in Reason as, like, you know, the best string sounds that I could find, and then had to send that out to the string players who have great ears and can transcribe. And so then they would basically be tracing the parts and sending me back files, and I'd be mixing and remixing. And it was about 20 cues or so. And some of them were really long, and it was a huge process. I just finished. And so that was a challenge in terms of production, because it was like something that I really pushed myself on and haven't done like a lot. I've done a few film scores, but this was like a major, major project. So then I think the best thing that I've come across is just working with people that do it better than I do, that like mix and record and use Pro Tools that do it like so much better than me. And then I can learn from them.
Yep.
Cause like, there's like a few people that I've worked with that are close friends. One is my drummer in my band, and he's just really solid. And he's taught me some like little secrets that I didn't know. And, you know, like busing can get really confusing, and I had to like overcome that a few years ago. So I think it's just surrounding yourself with people that are better than you is like always the best. That's always the best thing.
You know, I've got this engineer, and he's 78, used to be Van Morrison's guitarist. He's played with everybody from Etta James to Chuck Berry. And we have this great flow of how we work together. Like, he is a wizard at EQ. Now, I can sit there and EQ things all day, but if I EQ things more than an hour, everything starts to not sound the way I wanted it to sound. Because you can just go down that rabbit hole, and it can be an ongoing thing. So, like, I'll let him EQ for about an hour to 2 hours, and while he's EQing, I'll EQ something from behind and push, you know, a fader up and just make little tweaks, because I'm hearing it in a more open space than he is when he's like right at the board. And then after he sits, I'm like, you just let me know when you're ready and, you know, tag me in. And then he tags me in, and that's when I kind of do changes or rides or all of that. And it's like, I found like having somebody that knows a different side of what you do to compliment is like the greatest way to work, because you're accomplishing two things or three things or whatever all at once. And it's like, you're bouncing the idea off each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It drives me kind of crazy to mix, but I'm finding that I'm more in tune with what I want to hear and how I want to hear it. But it's also letting go. It's like,
yeah.
The first record, I was turning every knob and I was just getting lost in it. And now it's like, I'm not afraid to delegate and just be like, you are great at this. I'm going to watch you do what you do. And then we're going to find this happy medium between what you want and what I want and make it better than either of us could have done on our own. So, yeah. Like, I love that you have that same concept, because you want iron sharpens iron. So when you find somebody that, like, knows how to do some of the technical stuff, because it's enough just writing the song. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's, I know you're hands-on like I am, where you're like, I want to make sure it's done correctly. Otherwise, it's never going to be done right. But I also find that if you find those people that are just badasses, you start saying, oh my God, I didn't think it was going to turn out like this. This is awesome.
Sure. It's relinquishing control. Because I definitely have that with a lot of the production stuff that I do. And then there are some things that I just feel like very strong about. And there are some that I'm like, this is how it needs to be. But
is it drum sounds? Is it levels? Like, what do you obsess the most over?
I'm not great with like my drums that are behind me right now. Like they aren't mic'd well. It's not like I have like the most expensive dynamic mics for them, but like I do what I can. I feel pretty confident in my EQing and compression with that. But I think the thing I really obsess over is, cause I do a lot of more kind of organic folk stuff. So like the banjo, mandolin, and guitar, those have to be sounding really well, and placed in specific ways, and just kind of like, what's the tone? I'm always thinking like, what's the tone of this song? Is it going to be, am I trying to make it a little more vintage? Am I trying to make it more modern folk, or whatever song I'm doing? You know, I always am thinking like, what's the motivation? You know,
do you ever listen to, this is a question really for me, because this is something that I do, and I'm finding now more than ever that it's occurring like this. Do you ever reference like old songs that you're like, I want it to sound in this direction, and then you reference a song?
Yeah.
Do you do that a lot?
I've done that a lot for like sync projects, because a lot of the like licensing stuff that I've done, I'll have a company hire me to do sound alike stuff.
Right.
Which is, for those of you that don't know, like, here's a song, make it sound
like this.
Don't make it sound like that. You know, like, don't rip it off, but like, get as close as you can. It's kind of like a weird puzzle that you can't quite make work. You know what I mean? But I've done a lot of those. I actually like it. It's a good kind of mind game. So I'll reference the mix and try and make the mix sound really similar. Be like, oh, where's that kick drum?
Right.
That bass, where's that upright bass?
Well, this is what my question is, and this is what's crazy. I find that my memory of the mix, like meaning the, and really the ideal of what the mix is, let's say it's a Beatles song or a Zeppelin song. Let's take Zeppelin, because this just recently happened. So Zeppelin, when I think of Zeppelin, I always think big guitars, big drums.
Yeah.
What I think about, big guitars, big drums. So yeah. We finished, you know, mixing for like 5 or 6 hours, and then we took a break for dinner, and we got in the car and we were listening to some Zeppelin. And I sat there at a traffic light and I was like, oh my God. And my engineer Doug's like, what? I said, these drums are not that big. Like, they sound big in my mind from what I think about Zeppelin, but in the actual scope, they're not that big. And he just jumped in. He's like, you know, that's because Bonham used to record with a 24-inch kick. Most drummers record with a 22-inch kick. And he was like, you know, some people do 26-inch kicks. And what that does is it gives you like this distant kick sound that makes it sound like it's bigger than it actually is, because it's smaller in how much room it takes, but it's bigger as far as the sound. And I just was tripping out. Like, and I've been listening to so many albums like U2 or things like that. And it's like some of those songs, the drums aren't that big. And it's because of the trend of how they recorded, or like how they were thinking about drums, Ray Charles, you know, people like that too. And, you know, the bands aren't always this huge thing that I remember them to be mix wise. So right. The reason I'm asking you, it's like whenever you've referenced, like, let's say you take a mix of your, you know, current project, and then you listen to something that is, you know, it's got the same instrumentation. Have you noticed like a change in how things are mixed, panned, or EQ'd, or like the size of volumes? Do you notice any of those little intricacies and find it to be completely different than how you were thinking about it?
Yeah, like, I mean, there is a song I'm working on right now where I'm like, okay, I keep listening. First of all, I think the best tip that I have for anyone that is doing this and is mixing on their own is to always bounce the track and listen to it on as many devices and as many speakers. And first start with the phone speaker. Just listen to the mix on your phone without any, because that's going to be that a lot of people do that. A lot of people listen to music on their phones. Do I like it? No.
Right.
Don't listen to that on your phone, but it's like, it's a good little trick. And then listen to it on your computer, and then listen to it in your car, then put your headphones in, you know? Yeah. So the one I'm working on now, there's some spaces that need to be filled. And then I'm going, well, is that okay? Should I leave that a little bit open? Like, I don't know. I'm in that kind of head game right now where I'm like, I think it's there, but I'm not sure. And I might add some other things like foot stomps or, you know.
Yeah, it's like I battle either having less or throwing everything in the kitchen sink and just finding room for it all to kind of like do its thing and be present. And then I find myself like, I don't know if you do this, but even if you play multiple parts, or if you have six people on a track, you want to make sure that the mix represents what they did and honor that. So it's like, I find myself like fighting, like, oh my God, I want everybody to love what they're hearing back and be impressed with, oh, the EQ or the levels or the sounds or the way it was mic'd. All of it sounds so tremendous. And they don't even remember. Like, they'll never remember, because you're seeing it in like a stepwise motion, whereas they're seeing the full trajectory from beginning. That's it. And then they just hear the finished product. So how do you deal with that step-by-step process in making it balanced? I'm asking you some hardball questions, because these are things that are going through my head all the time.
I mean, it's interesting. Okay. So the question is not just like, how do you kind of take a step? Is it, how do you take a step back and listen to the different pieces?
Yeah. And how do you find the balance? Like, with like taking everything into consideration, because, you know, like in your band, you have a drummer that's playing, and it's like when they put in the time and they play a great fill or they play a great take, you want everybody to shine in these moments. Like, I feel like a great mix is when there's moments of everybody that's playing music to shine and come in and out and do something that is just ear catching, you know? And yeah. The funny thing is, like, sometimes it's just not going to happen like that. It's just going to, there's going to be somebody else that played something better, even though that person played something amazing in that moment. And you have to find this balance of like making sure one is in a certain place versus the other. You know what I mean? It's like, well, how do you deal with this?
Well, it comes down to, first of all, who you want to collaborate with, because, you know, if it's just you, if you're like, for me, I'm doing this song, this new one that I want to release as a single on my own. And that's, you know, I'm doing all of the parts, but I think if you're willing to expand and, you know, I did a song recently where I allowed a DJ to do a remix and make it like super electronic and kind of dance vibe. And I've never done that before. And I'm happy with it. So I'm going to have that other song as a single and then a remix by, you know, DJ Trotsky. And
that's awesome.
And so I think it's about like, I think it's about just trusting like the people that do their job really well. Like, yeah. I said before, like, he's an electronic guy that can add this kind of flavor. I'm just going to turn it over to him, you know, kind of like Postal Service style, where you're like, okay, I'll do this, like, you know, piano track and my vocal track and just send it over. Like, you do really good pop stuff, really good, like, very pop accessible mixes that are not like reggae pop.
It's funny, I find myself like doing two different styles of mixing. So like for the songwriting team, it's got to be pop and it's got to be vocal heavy and it's got to have production and things. But with my band records, I find it's like very different. It's like, I don't have the vocal mixed super hot. Like, I actually don't like that in a band mix. I actually like the vocal, like, skimming over, like, a dolphin over, like, the ocean. So, like, just moments where it's, like, right there. Because it's, like, I fight that the vocal can get too big and then the band sounds super small. But if the vocal's too small, then the band sounds too overwhelming. You can't hear lyric phrases. So, yeah, I'm finding that it's, like, this fine balance of two different styles of the way I personally like to mix. One is for the band and one is for the songwriting team, and they're completely different hats. Like, so I appreciate that compliment completely, because that's the goal. When I do something poppy, I want it to have that kind of mix and that sound.
Like a bite, like you've played me some stuff at your place and it's definitely got like that real catchy bite that is difficult to do. I mean, like the real pop stuff, it's something that I've definitely dabbled with, but it's not my forte. You know,
I don't think it's anybody. I think it's like everybody is experimenting. That's what makes it great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I find like what I love about your records, like you really take time in finding tones, instruments and hearing the right places for them. And it's like, you come from like Americana and like bluegrass style, and, you know, songwriting and singer songwriter music. And, you find these really cool colors song to song on your records. And I see so much of like how I do things and how you do things, because that it's that attention to detail of like knowing nuances and like, okay, this has to have a certain color this way. But the one thing I find myself like, I was just telling my folks this. I said, I think the one thing that stresses me out more than anything is mixing, because I could mix a song 150 times.
Totally.
150 different ways. Yeah. And nobody will tell the difference from mix one to mix 11. Totally. Unless I tell them, oh, this little thing happened here. And I obsess over it. Meanwhile, most people aren't going to catch any of the things exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. And some people will catch it. Like I played that other single that I'm going to put out soon. I played that for my partner, the first mix that I did. And she's not a musician, but then I played her the sixth mix and she was like, what happened here? Something went terribly wrong. And I was like, must return to what I was trying to go for, you know, and then I somehow got it back. But yeah, it's just,
You know what? You have to play the game too. You have to also like pretend you're playing her mix 1 and playing in the Big Six. That's when you know if somebody's really calling you out, or it's like, do they know? Like, I do that all the time. I will literally hear a comment from somebody and I'll be like, cool, cool, cool. And I'll test them. I'll be like, let me see if they can hear the difference. And if they make some weird comment about mix 1 being mix 6, I'm like, all right, you're out. Get out. Just that doesn't even help me. You know, I know you're just leading me with blind confidence.
I do that. I do that when I'm like producing other artists' stuff and we're vocal comping and it's taking too long. And I'm like, so do you like take 1, take 2, take 3? They're like, I really don't like take 3. I'll be like, okay, how about this one? And I'll play take 3. Love that one.
I love it. That's the one. And you're like, uh-huh. And it's just that silent victory. And that's all you need sometimes. It's like, okay, that's the scope of you don't know what you're doing. I'll be the one in control here.
Yeah, totally.
Well, let's have you play another song. What are you going to play us next?
Okay, well, this is a good segue into, we were talking about writing styles and, you know, writing songs outside of yourself. And it's been crazy times out there. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I felt like at one point, I wrote this song maybe right before the protests started. And I just thought to myself, I'm so exhausted. Like, I'm just tired of playing songs about me, you know? And I was really, as most people, good humans are right now, especially a lot of white people like myself, we're just really learning and we're waking up and we're educating ourselves and we're like, oh God, you know, it's that moment. So I wanted to write a song about, at my perspective as a white person dealing with race.
Oh, I love this. I got chills already. I know this is going to be a good one.
It's one of you, I don't know if you can relate, but it's one of those songs that just, it came out and it wasn't a lot. I didn't have to think about it.
Those are my favorite. Those, when you don't have to work and it just flows out, those are like the bingo, oh my God, I wish my life was always this easy moments.
Yeah. And so this is the one I've been working on in the studio as well. And I want to release it at the right time. I do really believe that I need to be very mindful of how I'm releasing material as a white person right now. And I just want to be better. Like, this is, the song is really about being a better ally and, really taking a closer look at this kind of stuff. So it's called Blind Spots.
It's called what? One more time?
It's called Blind Spots.
Oh, I love it.
All right, here we go. And I've only played it like once live, so.
That'd be awesome, I already know.
Keeping me awake, yet I feel stuck in my ways. I'm checking my blind spots time and time again, but I stop looking ahead. Oh, I stop looking ahead. About my pains, but I am privileged in so many ways. If the sirens are calling, I don't fear for my rights. I can run in the streets at night while a black man loses his life. Who are we to say that everything's changed when we follow the rivers? Bigotry and hate, the message that we get is us and then them. There's blood on your hands and you keep holding him down. Ooh, oh, you keep holding him down. problem when we keep our mouths shut. The man in the uniform is drunk on his power while the system stays in place. And we can't even talk about race. And who are we to say that everything's changed when we follow the rivers of bigotry and hate? The message that we get is us and then them. There's blood on your hands and close my eyes and I try to forget. He said, oh, I cannot breathe while you're on my neck. This is how we serve and pretend. Who are we to say that anything's changed when we follow the rivers of bigotry and hate? The message that we get, there's us and then them. There's blood on our hands and we keep holding them down. Ooh, oh, we keep holding them down. Down. Ooh, oh, we keep holding them down. Oh, we keep.
Yeah, what a fantastic song. My God.
Thank you.
You gotta record that. Gotta release that. That is a song for the time. Is a tremendous song.
Thank you.
My favorite song you played me. No bullshit.
Wow, thank you. That means
great, great lyrics, great message, great hook. Love the guitar part. It's very like, it's kind of got like a Ray LaMontagne. It's got a John Mayer kind of vibe. It's really great.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Love it. So let me ask you, when you're in this turbulent time like we're in, you find that it's instant inspiration. Do you have to process it? Or is that your way to process is to create?
Well, this, you know, usually when there's turbulence, I'm speaking from like it's turbulence within that is something maybe I have to figure out in my personal life or something that I have to figure out with my heart. And I mean, this is also something I have to figure out with my heart, but this was just like raw kind of, I couldn't even explain it when I saw the video, you know, and also it was when I saw the video, that a lot of things went through my mind with, why haven't I written a song like this before? Why haven't I done more? Where have I been as an ally? I think it just, there was a lot of like guilt, sadness, heartbreak, all the things washing over me. And I think when I'm feeling all of those, you know, I just was like, I have to get this out. I have to put this on a page. It wasn't that I had to think about it because it was just raw, emotion. I mean, I was just in tears, you know, and I have been.
You feel it when you listen to the words. It's like, and you know what? You're speaking for a lot of people. There's a lot of white guilt right now because of the times. And it's like, you know what? I could tell you, you don't have to put that on yourself, but your song is going to help a lot of people that do put that on themselves because it's potent and it is very now. And it is why we write. I mean, I look for songs like that because, you know, when I was watching all the riots and the protests, like I was so heavy hearted, I didn't want to touch an instrument. Like for me, I had to like process it, take a moment. It's like inhaling. And then I have to wait a little bit till I can exhale with something creative because it's so heavy. And I love that you were just in the moment and you were just like, I need to get this out of me right now because this is so relevant to what all the emotions that a lot of people are feeling right now.
It's true. And it was, I was really taken back. I did a little video of myself, a little what is it called, a cappella, where I'm playing all the parts. And I posted it and on Facebook, and people were so, I mean, I was surprised. I don't know why I was so surprised that people were like, oh my gosh, this is my experience.
Great song. It's a great song.
And I was just really, it meant a lot that people were able to relate and then post their own story. You right. know, we were able to go, oh my gosh, this is me. I'm feeling this guilt. I'm feeling, you know, and since then, you know, I have been telling myself, and I've been telling other white friends of mine, like, you know, the guilt comes with it. Yes. But it, like you said, we don't need that right now. What we need is to move forward.
Right.
We need to educate ourselves. And what we need is to just keep trying. You know, like, we're going to stumble, you know, because we, that's just what it is. Like, to learn about anything, to learn about race, to learn about gender, sexuality, these difficult issues, but specifically in regards to race, we're going to mess up.
Right.
And what we have to do is forgive ourselves, learn from it, and move on and be better.
Well, I mean, that's part of the evolution, you know. It's like owning it and moving forward. And also, I think the biggest thing, and maybe you're more aware of it, I know some of my Caucasian friends are all saying it, it's like if they weren't aware of it before, they become more compassionate and aware of it now. And I think just that alone is how the healing starts for so many, you know, because I'm brown, but I'm not black. But the crazy thing is to hear so many African Americans, guys that I've known, girls that I've known for years, and to hear some of their stories that, you know, they don't bring into our connection as far as when we're hanging or making music. You know, these battles they're facing by themselves. So like, it kind of like disarmed me a little bit. It was like, you know what? This is a time of listening. This is a time of reflection. This is a time, yeah. You know, like hearing all this and feeling for African Americans because of everything that's going on, because the statistics don't lie. There's still like so many issues. The funny thing, the ironic thing. So this new record I'm doing is called Revolutions. Wow. I wrote this song 5 years ago, and it was like during the time of all the Egypt revolutions, all these things, that was my inspiration. But like I had lyrics like people looting in the streets while education takes its plight, and all these little innuendos. And we mixed that song, which was the first song we started, on the first night of all the protests. And it just like blew my mind, like how art can be the serendipitous and synchronistic thing that can collide. And the reason I'm bringing it up is don't wait 5 years to release that song, because that song is right now. It is so current. It's so ahead of its time too, because that's one of the things that we need. We need artists to do stuff like that, to create works that make us feel and think and look forward, not look backwards. So, kudos to that song.
It's almost done being mixed right now. That's the one that I'm like, should I just leave it? I recorded a bunch of parts for it. It's almost there. That's what I've been listening to try and tweak a little bit. But yeah, probably in the next week, I'm going to be putting it out. And I want to put it out as a single and have an option. If you want a free download, cool. But like taking donations for a move for a Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
You know, George Floyd Fund. You know, one of the foundations. I need to research it more. Yeah,
I love that. You got a good heart, Abby. A really good heart.
Thanks.
What are you gonna play us next? I want to hear what you're gonna play us next, because you are just hitting it out of the park tonight.
Well, I'll keep just doing some new ones, because I feel like that's what, you know, why not just share new work.
I love it.
This one is about my own my own experience. This one actually is about a fight that I had with my girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
And just kind of processing it as we do through music. And it's called Corners.
Good titles, by the way.
Well, thank you. All right. Thank you.
see outside our heads. The days where I was safe inside my home, where no one could get in. I'm trying to find that thing I call my own, or someone to share it with. You're someone worth sharing it.
Way to end the show. Abby, where can people find your music if they want to hear you and follow you?
They can find me on Instagram at Abby Posner Music, or Facebook at Abby Posner Music, or abbyposner.com.
Spell it out, because people are dumb.
ABBY. People are dumb. ABBY, and then last name is POSNER. You can also look up my band on Spotify, which is ABBY. And The Myth, M-Y-T-H.
I love that name, by the way.
Oh, it's awesome.
So mystical, folky, retro. I love it.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, Abby, I look forward to our songwriting showcase, songwriting round on June 26th, 7 p.m.
It's going to be great.
And it's always a pleasure to cross paths with you and hear your music and talk music with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll have to have you again. So I may ask you this time with much more advance notice. I promise.
5 minutes before. We're on.
I love it. Thank you so much. You killed it. And you're such an amazing, amazing artist.
Thank you
for sharing your music.
Cheers. Much love. Bye.